move to case number 5, the United States versus Best.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Attorney Erica Bierman. I'm appearing for the appellant, Jeremy Best. And this is an appeal from a judgment, including sentence imposed by the Honorable John C. Shabazz following a guilty plea. The reason that we're here today is whether the district court erred in pronouncing a mandatory 115-month sentence and also imposing an alternative sentence, which is unreasonable, and also whether the district court erred in denying Mr. Best acceptance of responsibility. In the trial court, in this case, characterized Mr. Best's sentence as fair and reasonable, which does not inherently make it so. The court made a sweeping statement that it's one thing to stake out the record, but it's another thing to falsely deny the testimony, which we've heard today, and the court does accept that testimony. However, at this time, because of the nature of this case and when this case occurred, we didn't have the benefit of Seventh Circuit Booker. We only had the guidance of Blakely versus Washington at the time of this case. And this case has never had the benefit of Palladino, of whether the district court would have imposed the same sentence had the guidelines just been advisory at that particular time. Mr. Best's sentence was imposed merely on the fact of a mechanical application of the guidelines. He was a criminal history category 2 with a base offense level 30.
And but how clear were you with the district court when during this back and forth on whether you were going to contest the amount or not, that it was Blakely and it was the legal consequences that were going to flow from your argument? You know, in other words, just kind of preserving a legal point versus saying, no, I never dealt in, you know, X number of kilos, it was one half X, or, you know, whatever, the amount doesn't matter. But I think the concern, the district judge seems to have had the feeling that it was really more the second kind of objection, that he was waffling about how much responsibility he really was willing to acknowledge, as opposed to the first kind, which is merely preserving a legal point.
That's a very good question, Your Honor. Originally, at the time his sentencing was scheduled, was June 30th, 2005.
And that's right on the cusp.
So it was right on the cusp, and we had just received the Blakely opinion, and we didn't really have any guidance as to how that would specifically apply, since there was only footnote 9 in Blakely that says that this does not specifically address the sentencing guidelines. And the district court, he did kind of waffle back and forth, but it was more of a legalistic challenge. I mean, we did file the objections to the pre-sentence report. Then there was the addendum filed conceding the applicability of Blakely. Then we withdrew our objections, and then we proceeded to sentencing on July 7th, 2 days before the Seventh Circuit opinion.
But what the court decides finally is this, you know, marijuana equivalent business. I can't remember. He admits to the 84.6 grams of cocaine, which has some marijuana equivalent, less than 700, I assume.
That's correct, right?
I guess I'm still trying to get at whether the objections say I can only be sentenced for 84.6 grams because Blakely says that's the amount that I've admitted to. This is a guilty plea. And so we don't even need to talk about anything else, sort of, or whether he's saying, I didn't have anything to do with the rest of the drugs. Is the pre-sentence report or something going to clarify that?
The pre-sentence report and all of the addendums, his original objections to the pre-sentence report said, I'm pleading to the 84.6 grams based on Blakely, and that was what my plea consisted of, not including the relevant conduct of the additional 700.21 kilograms of the marijuana equivalent. So it was more of a legalistic challenge versus a factual challenge of the additional drug quantity attributed to him.
All right, because what the judge does is he interprets Mr. Best's unwillingness to concede that he had responsibility for the rest of the relevant conduct as, let's say, a failure of contrition, a failure of ability to admit to what he did. And, you know, judges assess or not, you know, award or not the acceptance of responsibility reduction based on whether they think the person's really sorry for it, you know, whether he's really and truly accepted responsibility. And I guess at this point we're also stuck a bit, are we not, with clear error review, because the judge has to interpret somehow what went on, and he seems to be interpreting it in a way of saying, I'm not going to fess up to the rest of the relevant conduct, and instead of saying, I just don't think anything else I did is legally pertinent.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's correct, Your Honor. Unfortunately, at the time of the sentencing hearing, like I said, I mean, we were scheduled, the PSR was filed on the 24th, or the 24th was the Blakely opinion. Then the U.S. probation officer filed the third addendum conceding the applicability of Blakely on the 29th. His original sentencing was scheduled for the 30th of June, and he objected to the relevant conduct drug weight under Blakely. And then on the 7th, we had a continued sentencing of July, and we did not have the benefit of the Seventh Circuit Booker opinion. And then on the 9th, we did have it. So he was just trying to act consistently with what he believed was acceptance of responsibility at that time, considering the lack of guidance that we had, and this court's well aware of the flux in the law at that particular period of time.
So your argument is essentially that his legal denial under Blakely of the relevant conduct is not the same as a factual denial, which is what was attributed to him by the district court in this case when the acceptance of responsibility credit was denied?
That's correct, Your Honor. He was trying to make a legal challenge to what he believed that he needed to accept responsibility for to still have acceptance of responsibility attributed to him.
Then at the sentencing hearing, though, weren't there factual challenges made to the evidence presented by the government? Or is that not right?
It was the credibility of the witnesses that he challenged at the time of sentencing. He challenged the credibility of Greg Shiver, Travis Ryan, and Nate Felix because of the specifics of their testimony. I mean, there was never a specific finding of their credibility beyond saying, I find their testimony correct, which they couldn't provide any specific information as to dates, times, locations, when things were alleged to have happened. So he believed that he was still acting consistently with what acceptance of responsibility was at that particular time because of the flux in the law.
Now, isn't that sort of an alternative argument that you're making, that we just don't know enough about how the judge came up with this particular number, the 700 number?
The 700 number was based on the testimony of Travis Ryan, Greg Shiver, and Nathan Felix.
Right, but the judge didn't really spell out why he was, I guess maybe we just say he did it. And that was all consistent with the PSR as well, right?
Yes, there were some additional drug quantities attributed to Mr. Best in the pre-sentence report, but it was based primarily on the testimony of Greg Shiver.
Okay.
So, also, as this court's aware, in your opinion a couple of weeks ago in Dean, the defendant must be afforded an opportunity to draw the judge's attention to any 3553A factors that might warrant a sentence different from the guideline sentence. At this particular time, because it was just a mechanical application of the guidelines, the district court judge merely based his sentence on the extent of time that this defendant was alleged to have been involved, the drug quantity, and the type of offense involved. There aren't any specific findings as to any specific characteristics of the defendant. He didn't consider that the defendant is a family man, that he has a very nominal criminal history. He was only criminal history category 2. He didn't find that he has to promote the respect for law, that he acknowledged what he had done and what he had done to his family, any other factors under 3553A that might have mitigated his sentence from the 115-month sentence. And as such, we'd respectfully request that the sentence be remanded back to the district court for resentencing.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Altman?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. The United States concedes that the district court erred when it sentenced the defendant because it treated the sentencing guidelines as mandatory. That error was harmless, however, because the district court also imposed a reasonable alternative discretionary sentence.
But Ms. Altman, let's go to the last point that Ms. Bierma made. If this sentencing proceeding were to take place today,
yes,
there would be the process of going through figuring out what the proper guideline sentence was, but then there would be a point at which, under Dean or whatever, under Booker for that matter, the defendant in some fairly structured way would be able to bring the 3553A factors to the judge's attention. Now, through absolutely no one's fault, this case happened to come up at a time that no one knew that that was the drill. And so even though Judge Sabaz says in his judgment order he thinks the 115 months sentence is a reasonable one, there's a gap in the process here. There's a gap in the record, since many of the factors that can now be raised under 3553A were actually even prohibited by the guidelines. So no responsible lawyer would have said, you know, hey, Judge Sabaz, you know, here are things I want you to think about. So I'm a little troubled at this flaw in the procedure that we have, even though there have been some instances in which the judge has said, I think, you know, whatever it is, 115 months is reasonable, and we've upheld them. But at least the argument here is being presented to us that this process was not what it would be today.
Well, Your Honor, there were some arguments made to the court regarding the 3553A factors. They did make the argument that he had a close family relationship with both of his parents and his small child. They also made the argument that he had benefited from drug treatment in the past and that he was a young man. So these factors were before the court when he made his decision. And 3553A factors have always been a part of the court's process.
Yes and no. I mean, you don't want to overdo that, because actually some of them really were then taken off the table by, or strongly discouraged, at least,
correct,
by the guidelines.
Correct. But they've always been supposed to consider the 3553A factors in determining a sentence.
Well,
some were prohibited.
Some were prohibited, yeah.
These factors regarding his family and those sort of things, they were made known to the judge, and he did have them in front of him. And as George said, the district court isn't required to recite all of the 3553A factors in imposing his sentence. It's enough if the sentence falls within a properly calculated guideline range, which
right.
in this case
we
it does.
We understand that, but that's against a background that the judge knows that there is the 3553A part of the process, which, of course, now we do, but you know, Judge Sabaz was operating under the disadvantage of not having any idea, you know, what was going to happen. There was Blakely out there. This court was issuing our Booker decision. As we all know, more things happened. And so I'm not faulting anybody. I'm just saying that we don't have that kind of confidence that he was keeping in mind the full range of the statute that we would be entitled to today.
And if that's the case, then perhaps this court would have a problem with the sentence, but I submit that there were some factors in front of him that he could consider in making the reasonable sentence that he did. Okay. I believe that the alternative sentence is reasonable. The guidelines were correctly calculated. The testimony of the three witnesses at trial was consistent, at sentencing, was consistent with their grand jury testimony. It was consistent with their statements made to law enforcement. And the judge did make specific findings regarding the amounts of marijuana equivalent that he attributed to the defendant. On page 40 of the sentencing transcript, he did find 510 kilograms of marijuana equivalent attributable from Greg Shiver's testimony, and 246 kilograms of marijuana equivalent attributable to Travis Ryan's testimony. That put him above 700 kilograms of marijuana equivalent, which put him at level 30.
What about the point, though, that he was trying to preserve this Blakely objection? Some people thought, I mean, you can go back and look at the press of the time, that sentences really were going to have to be limited to whatever the guilty plea or the jury finding was, and so he comes in with this thing and suddenly he loses acceptance of responsibility over it.
Correct. What started out as what could have been purely a legal challenge became a frivolous and false denial of relevant conduct through the process of the sentencing. Throughout that hearing, he claimed that he could only be sentenced on 84.6 grams. He completely denied the existence of any of the other testimony or weight that these witnesses put on him. Greg Shiver put over 2 kilos of cocaine on him, and Travis Ryan put over 900 grams of cocaine on him.
Well, when you say he denied, did he say, I've never met these people, I never dealt drugs with them, or did he just say, or did he just keep saying, you have to sentence me only on the cocaine?
He did not ever say that he had never met them. He kept saying, I can only be sentenced on 84.6 kilograms. He did not even acknowledge the existence
of
the rest of it.
That sounds like a legal objection. If he had said, I never sold any drugs to you, then I could see the frivolous denial of relevant conduct. But if he really is digging in on the legal objection...
But the other thing that he said is that Mr. Best has accepted responsibility for the exact amount that he pled to. Based
on
that record...
If he was right on the law, which, of course, we have to deal in a hypothetical world because it's more complicated now, but if he had been right on the law, then he really did only have to accept responsibility for the amount he pleaded to.
I think a better way to have made the objection in a way that would not have cost him to lose acceptance would be if he would have said, we acknowledge that the weight that these witnesses attributed to us is over 700 kilograms of marijuana. We don't dispute that. However, we do not believe we can be sentenced on that amount. We can only be sentenced on 84.6 kilograms. Acknowledging the amount of relevant conduct would have allowed him to keep acceptance. I think the problem was he never even acknowledged anything above the 84.6 kilograms at all, let alone whether he could be sentenced on it, but that it even existed. And I think that was the false
waiver argument.
Well, he would have still had
here arguing that he waived his right to be sentenced on the lower amount.
And that may be, but had he acknowledged the amount existed, I don't believe the court would have found, or the government would have suggested, that there was a false denial of relevant conduct. That was the problem. Because the guideline calculation was correctly calculated, he was at a level 30. He was not entitled to acceptance. That, combined with a criminal history category of 2, put him at 108 to 135. The sentence of 115 months is within that. It's reasonable. I don't believe there are any 3553A factors present which would rebut that presumption, and I would therefore request this court affirm his conviction and his sentence.
Thank you. Ms. Bierman?
Just a few quick points, Your Honors.
Let me interrupt you just
sure.
Initially. What 3553A factors were not submitted to the court that you would submit if you went back and resentenced?
I guess I would promote the promoting the respect for the law, more of the specific characteristics of this individual defendant, any kind of educational and vocational needs that this particular defendant has, so he could ensure that when he's out of the criminal justice system that he's able to be a productive member of society and you don't have this recidivism problem of him being back in the system as soon as he gets out of the system. I would also make sure that there wasn't, also with regard to the disparity in sentencing factor, I would bring that to the court's attention also. But if I make one more quick point, he believed at that particular time he was acting consistently with acceptance of responsibility under Blakely, because we did not have any other guidance from any other circuits or any other courts as to how to interpret Blakely. And he believed that to preserve that, he needed to object to the relevant conduct and only be sentenced on what he specifically pled to. So we would respectfully request that this matter be
removed. Let me ask one further question. You did, as your opponent suggests, submit 3553 factors to the court, though, right?
We did submit some 3553A factors, but it was more of a mechanical application of the guidelines and just talking about who the specific defendant is versus the specific 3553A factors. We just respectfully request that this matter be remanded for resentencing.
Thank you, counsel. You accepted the appointment in this case. The court thanks you for that acceptance.